Penguin Random House Audio presents City Under One Roof by Iris Yamashita. Read for you by Aspen Vincent, Shannon Tayo, and Anna Caputo. For Kayako Yamashita, 1928 to 2005.
Chapter 1. Amy.
And when did you find the body? Officer Newirth paused for a moment before adding. Parts? When did you find the body parts?
It was a hand and a foot, to be exact. Or at least Amy thought there was a foot. She hadn't bothered to look inside the boot, but since Officer Newirth said parts instead of part, she assumed there must have been a foot, a bloated, sawed-off, purple-blotched piece of flesh that would have made her dry heave at the sight. Yesterday, around 11 a.m., she said. She was pretty sure she had mentioned this detail at least 6 times that very day. She'd thought getting pulled out of algebra class would be fun, but now she was having second thoughts. The boot, she remembered, looked fairly new. It was covered with mud and grime, but the treads weren't that worn, and the laces hadn't frayed yet. She hadn't told any of this to Officer Newirth, though. Up until then, she tried to say as little as possible, sticking to answers like, yes, no, and I don't know. Amy Lynn stared at Officer Newirth, and his receded to an island hairline, and decided that he was not someone who could be trusted. For one thing, he was wearing a gold watch. Any man who wears a gold watch is a little shady. Second, anyone who asks you the same question over and over expecting a different answer does not trust you, and therefore you should not trust them. And last of all, Newirth was from Anchorage, and Point Meteor people tended to keep their mouths shut around any of the otters. Otters is what the kids called people outside Point Meteor because it kind of sounded like the word others.
So tell me again, who were you with?
He asked. Amy sighed internally and gave him a glare. Did she look like a caged parrot that would keep repeating the same thing over and over again? Officer Newirth shifted in his seat and adjusted his leather duty belt, which sagged with the weight of lethal equipment, a baton, cuffs, a magazine pouch, a flashlight, a taser, pepper spray, and, of course, a Glock pistol. But despite all his protective gear, Newirth looked uncomfortable under the glare of a 17-year-old who was barely 5'2". He finally turned his eyes away and looked down at his notepad.
Celine Hoffler and Marco Salonga?
Yes, Amy finally answered as if his question was somehow offensive.
And what were you doing at the cove?
Just getting out. Amy wasn't about to tell him the real reason they went to the cove, which was to smoke pot. Even though marijuana was legal in Alaska, they were still minors. It was a Sunday, and there was a break in the rain, so they had all bundled up in their neoprenes, parkas, and ski caps, and decided to paddle their kayaks out to Hidden Cove. On sunny days in summer, Sanders Glacier across the inlet would look brilliant against the sky, with blue and white ice caps like a giant slushy spilled onto a mountain valley. Tourists would come in flocks during the high season to Point Meteor. Even though, Amy knew, the real pronunciation of Meteor was probably the French way, rhyming with getaway, everyone butchered the name and said it in a way that sounded like dirtier. The otters always wanted to see the glaciers in the Sound and paid top dollar for cruise ships and yachts to take them up close. Amy wasn't sure why. She'd been up to a few of the glaciers, including Sanders, and had come to the conclusion that they were prettier from afar. On that Sunday in October, though, there had been dense clouds hanging low over the cove, and Sanders just looked like a looming gray monster behind the mist. Since tourist season was over, and the thrum of motorboats and sea-doos was gone, it was pretty quiet on the water. Just the dwop, dwop sound of their paddles dipping in and out, and the kittiwakes screeching overhead. Once they got to the beach, they loitered around, past a joint, not really talking or doing anything specific. Celine hopped on a fallen log and balanced across the length of it like a high-wire act. Her sandy blonde hair floated behind her in the wind, the way you see in the movies. Amy had always been envious of Celine's hair, because hers was just a dull black. She wanted to dye it platinum blue, except that her mother would probably kill her. Literally. Marco was skipping rocks, or maybe he was throwing them at birds. She couldn't remember exactly. Amy started combing the beach for mementos to add to her collection. Fish skeletons and coins, jewelry, and other odds and ends left behind by careless tourists. It was about this time that she noticed something on the south side of the cove. Just a little shimmer, like a Morse code of light. And headed over toward it to investigate. It was sunshine, reflecting off the rubber toe of a hiking boot. She didn't realize then that it was anything more than a boot. Kind of a shame, she thought, that someone had lost a perfectly good boot. But when she bent down on the gravelly shore to take a closer look, something else caught her eye. Something she had almost stepped on. It was a severed hand, half buried in the sand. Or at least it looked like a hand, but it was green and almost translucent. The way glow-in-the-dark stickers look when the light is on. She could see the lines of the joints on the fingers, but the entire hand was swollen and greasy-looking. It felt as if a whole minute went by while she just stood there, staring. In reality, it was probably more like 10 seconds before she finally blinked and found her voice. "Guys," was all she could muster. The others immediately stopped what they were doing and came to see what she was pointing at. Celine was the one who actually screamed, a high-pitched, ear-splitting, almost wail of a cry that echoed across the valley and sent shivers down Amy's spine.
"And what did you do after you found the parts?" Officer Neuwirth interrupted her thoughts and continued with his interrogation. At least it felt like an interrogation to Amy, even though it was just a witness account. Amy wanted to reply. "What do you think we did? Hang them up for Halloween decorations?" But instead, she said, "We went back to the Daveco and told Officer Barkowski."
"The Daveco?"
Amy sighed.
"The building we're sitting in now, the Davidson Condos."
The condos were supposed to have been named after some general who served in World War II, but she had heard a rumor that the buildings were actually named after Randolph Davidson, a famous Alaskan con man who set up a fake telegraph office through which he took money for sending blips and beeps that never went anywhere except into a wall. Neuwirth laughed at the name.
"Is that what you call it?
So how long have you lived here? In the Daveco?"
Amy knew this question had nothing to do with the body parts. 14 years, she replied.
"Holy cow,"
he said with a kind of pity in his voice. People from Anchorage tended to look at Point Meteor kids as charity cases. "It's always shittier in Point Meteor," they would say. It wasn't just about sub-zero temperatures and 8 months of practical winter. The thing that really made otters believe residents of Point Meteor were batshit crazy was the fact that they all lived in one building, in the Daveco. There were 205 full-time residents in Point Meteor. The Daveco had a post office, a church, an infirmary, and a general store that also acted as a gift shop, selling the same touristy tchotchke since the 90s, Sanders Glacier mugs, and court coasters with pictures of moose, bears, or kittiwakes. The school was just an underground tunnel away. Back when the city was a military outpost, The Walcott building next door had a bowling alley.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?